step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
We made this.
Welcome to Rarely Going, an animated Star Trek podcast on the We Made This podcast network. I'm your host for this episode, Lee Hutchison, and we continue our coverage of the third season of Star Trek Lower Decks by discussing episode 4, Room for Growth. In this episode, written by John Cochran and directed by Jason Zurich, Mariner, Boimler, and Tendi clash with their arch rivals Delta Shift, while the Cerritos engineers go on a mandatory relaxation leave. And my guest in this episode is Jeff Owen. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Lee. Glad to be here.
Yeah, so let's kind of start with our thoughts on Lower Decks so far. What have you thought of this third season of the show? I think, yeah, we've hit the fourth episode. We're maybe about just closing in on halfway through the season. What are you thinking so far?
Well, it's Lower Decks, so they haven't put a foot wrong yet for me. I'll go into it a little bit later on, but I think this has kind of been my least favourite of the season so far.
Okay, interesting.
But that isn't to say I hate it. I think it's still firing on all cylinders. It's just that, we've had some quite good stories this year, this season so far, and I think the story for this one wasn't as good. Personally.
Interesting. Yeah, I've really enjoyed the season. I think I'd probably agree with you. Maybe not my favorite of the three so far, but you know, I think when I think of some of the, you know, the other Star Trek shows going all the way back in time, you know, it's one of those ones sometimes when I go, oh, I didn't really enjoy season 6 of Voyager or season 2 of Enterprise. You know, it's like when I say that, I'm like, just not a fan. I'd really struggle to watch this. Usually 3 or 4 times I will watch even the worst Star Trek, but like with Lower Decks, I'm like, oh, it's maybe not as good, but gosh, it's still some of the best Star Trek I think that's kicking around just now. They've set that bar really high, and you know, in particular, I thought the opening episode to the season was probably one of the best season openers from the entire franchise.
Yeah, I've got to agree with you. The whole playoff as well. And I know I've heard people say, oh, yeah, everything happened elsewhere. The whole thing with Captain Freeman, it didn't happen on camera, it happened elsewhere. But that's kind of been the whole premise with Lower Decks. This is what the ensigns are doing, and the senior crew are off doing the important stuff. And you don't see what they're doing, you just see how it affects the ensigns. So yeah, I thought, the season opener was fantastic.
Yeah, and I think like take Jax, for example, you know, it summed up perfectly that he died, he came back. Yeah, what happened? Oh, don't worry about that. That would have probably been in like the, you know, the traditional Star Trek episode all about that. You know, I thought that just absolutely nailed what that Lower Decks experience was meant to be like. And I remembered sort of going into Discovery, for example, when that first came out, and there was so much talk about it's going to be at the kind of the Lower Decks, you know, it's not always going to be sort of about the captain. And it's never, ever felt like that. It never felt like it truly committed to that idea, whereas Lower Decks continues to do that. And I think that's been a real highlight of the show.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me in a much more comedic fashion. You obviously know the Tom Cruise War of the Worlds film. The whole thing where it's happening to him, but the really important stuff is happening over that hill. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what Lower Decks feels to me, but done so much better.
Yeah, that is a brilliant analogy. I'm loving that one. And I find those things so interesting sometimes, just it's capturing that minutia of life and so on. I mean, you know, I suppose we're recording this while there's just been that huge, insane transition of power at, like, politically, you know, in the monarchy here in the UK. And I often find myself wondering, going, I wonder what it's like for perhaps the civil servant in that sort of situation, or the person that's kind of, you know, working in the background at Balmoral or Buckingham Palace that sort of deals with these kind of processes. We see the so much of the front-facing people. What's it like to work in the lower decks of government and monarchy at such crazy, unique times? You know, those stories are very rarely represented, but I bet they'd be so incredibly rich.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're talking about the change of monarchy, but a change of monarchy and a change of prime minister in the space of 48, 72 hours. So, you know, it's been a huge political upheaval here in the UK. As somebody that works in local government myself, it hasn't really trickled down to us yet. But we are sort of about as lower decks as we can get in my job role. So yeah, it's we carry on regardless. And yet things are happening, which you see emails coming down through the chain going, oh yeah, that particular job role has had its name changed or something. But they're still in the same job role.
Yeah, it's crazy. But hey, let's dive into the episode. I'm sure people have had enough of people talking about the monarchy and government. Let's give people a nice escape. So the episode kind of opens with the lower decks kind of corridor quarters. You know, always still bizarre to me, that seems more crowded than ever. And Captain Freeman has been taken over by an alien mask. I mean, how many times has that happened now in Star Trek? Who starts to turn everything, including Boimler's violin, into stone. So, yeah, what did you think of that opening kind of little sequence and so on? It very much clearly reminded me of that infamous Star Trek Next Generation Season 7 episode, Masks. Did you enjoy this, you know, episode as we see the Cerritos being transformed?
I loved it. As soon as Freeman starts floating down the corridor with the mask on, you think, oh, fantastic. They're paying tribute to one of the lesser popular episodes of Next Gen, I think it's safe to say. But what I loved about it as well is the fact that even the crew are going, oh, God, not again. You know, they've seen this time and time before. They already know the workload they've got ahead of us by turning all the stuff that's been turned to stone back into metal, back into all the equipment that they use on the Cerritos. And Boimler's comment, you know, he's only just tuned his violin, and instead of his violin, he's got this stone statue in place. Brilliant.
What I like about Lower Decks is that, you know, Star Trek has such a rich history. You know, I think a lot about these sort of Star Wars shows, or, you know, even other some kind of shows where there's now they go, right, what are we going to dive into? Oh, we've got to pay tribute to this infamous character or this really famous plot line, or we've got to give an Easter egg acknowledgement of like this random background character. And it feels like makes the universe so small, but with Star Trek being as rich as it is, they, you know, it feels fitting for Lower Decks to go, remember that episode that everyone kind of makes fun of, Masks? Let's bring up that. And it doesn't feel tired. You know, it's a little wink and a nod to something we've maybe seen before, but it doesn't feel tired to kind of dive into that. There's, you know, we sometimes hear about, think of when we heard probably that Kirk was going to be joining Star Trek New Strange New World Season 2, and you're like, oh, we've kind of seen a lot of Kirk in, you know, the rebooted films, you know, other things. With this, it's like, yep, that's totally fine. I'm not eye rolling. I'm embracing the minutiae, the little insights into to that deep canon.
Yeah, that's it. And you can imagine, obviously, with the crews of these ships, they're legendary, not just to Star Trek fans, but to Starfleet in general. The crews of the various ships named Enterprise, the crews of Deep Space Nine, crew of Voyager. Of course, you're going to get the ensigns coming up. They've read the mission reports, they've read the books, presumably, and they're going to be massive fans of them as well. So I do love the fact that we're watching fans of Star Trek in Star Trek, and they're staying completely within the timeline. If they started going on about what was happening on seasons 3 and 4 of Discovery, or season or on Star Trek Picard for that matter, you could just say, well, no, they wouldn't know that, you know, it would be completely out of the timeline. But they're not doing that. They're staying completely in the timeline. They'd know everything that would go up until that point. So, yeah, they're Star Trek fans in Star Trek.
So we kind of get to see post credits, like Billups and the team are sort of working around the clock to restore everything to normal, but it's taken a toll on this engineering team to the point that Dr. Tanner describes them as an effing pile of stress. So Captain Freeman orders a mandatory relaxing vacation. God, I'd love that right now. But as Rutherford packs a tricorder, instruction manual, not one, but two of them for a spa trip, Boimler mentions the room lottery as four separate quarters have opened up on deck one. So Tendi could fill it with beakers. Mariner fantasize about being able to close the door. So we kind of get an idea about what this kind of episode's going to be about, is that we're going to have the vacation trip, and we're also going to have this trip to sort of this mission to sort of see if they can win out in the lottery. So what did you think of kind of the central plot as we sort of see it for the next 23 minutes of, this A and B plot?
Which is the A and which is the B plot in this one? I haven't quite worked it out.
Yeah, I think for me, my think I would go the A plot feels like it's perhaps like the lottery part and so on. And I think Lower Decks, I'm always amazed that it's a 22-minute TV show with how they blend these A and B plots. It's not just one episode that we follow through. They commit to that Star Trek A and B plot that we do so well. But I think there's an argument to be made that both of them are a bit of an A plot, for example. But I just maybe it's just that bias of thinking, oh, we've got more of the main cast with the room aspect that we're gonna sort of like kind of focus in on that one. That's kind of my feeling, I guess. What about for you?
It's funny that you say both of them are the A plot. I was thinking both of them could be the B plot, because if it was a regular episode of Next Generation, this would just be happening while the Enterprise was making contact, making first contact with an alien race. But they're both B plots, and that's what Lower Decks does to its best. It's B plots all the way. But as to your original question, I love the whole idea, because I love the fact that they're mixing up the characters as well. You've got Rutherford going down with Freeman and Billups and the engineering crew to the I've forgotten the name of the ship, to the Dove. And you've got Mariner, Tendi, and Boimler teaming up then to try and get this room lottery swung in their favor. Because as we'll find out, they find out what's going on with Delta Shift.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing's ever easy in the Lower Decks world. So Rutherford jumps down from his bunk, causing Tendi to drop her pet. I mean, how many pets does she seem to have? It seems a bit more of a manageable one than this killer dog that she had before, but it scampers off and tries to hide in the Jeffries tube. But Tendi, determined as ever, gives chase and catches it. But as you highlighted, she catches the mischievous Delta Shift's plan to cheat in the lottery. So when she hears this, Mariner then will make her own plans to cheat in the lottery. So yeah, it was nice to see sort of the return of Delta Shift. And yeah, I agree 100% with you, because I think my first criticism perhaps of season one and then into season two was that everyone sort of stuck into the very familiar pairings like Boimler and Mariner, Tendi and Rutherford. It was always those two together at all points. And I was like, mix things up. And I always like seeing those unique pairings in Star Trek. Yeah, we have the established ones, but equal, it's always fun to see the others together. So, I'm gonna, would you, do you, would you be cheating in this? Would you be wanting to sort of go, right, we need to get in, or would you be just a good guy, just hoping that the lottery goes in your favor?
How Starfleet would you be? The thing is, if you found that other people are going to be cheating to try and swing the vote, oh, I don't know. I think I'd probably be looking to try and find some other way to do it. But yeah, it's 100% Mariner to go, well, if they're going to cheat, we're going to cheat.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Best thing to do is just be sly and just go, hey, Commander, these people are going to cheat. Immediately knock them out, boost your chances. You get to be proper Starfleet and mischievous at the same time.
Yeah, but Mariner's not the sort of
No.
person to go to the captain or the commander and go, Delta Shift are doing this. No, she's not going to do that. Tendi might have. Boimler would have done it. But I think once Mariner's said, oh, we're going to cheat, they've sort of gone, oh, yeah, all right then. And I think Tendi loves the whole fact that she's going to be cheating the system. You can see the glint in her eye that, oh, yeah, let's do something a bit more unorthodox.
So we cut back to our kind of A or B plot, that, you know, depending on our listeners' opinion. And Freeman and the engineering crew beam to the Dove and are met by Tawes, an Andosian, who gives them all wristbands which monitor their stress levels. So she shows Freeman the various relaxation rooms, including a puppy room or a kitten room for the more deviant, mud baths imported from Teller Prime, and target practice room currently occupied by a Klingon that they're too scared to remove. Not that Billups has noticed as the team are fixing a door. So, you know, I'm curious about you. When you go on holiday, you know, do you find it easy to switch off, or would you be one of those people, like, you maybe got, it's a bank holiday on Monday, you know, are you going to be relaxing? You know, are you going to be bringing down those stress levels, or are you going to be someone that is like straight into the hard work, trying to get things fixed? You know, is that what you need to do to stay calm?
Bank holiday Monday coming up. I will be coming off a night shift on bank holiday Monday. So I will spend some of the day sleeping, and then probably just recovering from the 2 day 2 days of night shifts. So yeah, as to what I'd like to do on holidays and whatever, to be honest, I like to do stuff. If I'm on vacation, I like to go away and do things. There's a guy I work with who goes on holiday, and he goes to, you know, the usual sort of places, Benidorm, Mallorca, that sort of thing. But all he does is he'll stay by the pool or stay by the beach and drink beer and or lager all day. And it's like, why? That doesn't have any appeal to me. I like to go places and do things. I don't know
Yeah,
about you.
I'm the exact same. But you know, perhaps if I was in Star Trek, you know, and you see it as a very familiar downtime, I'd be in the holodeck, and that's where Mariner and Boimler and Tendi begin their plan to win the room lottery and enter the holodeck, which has been used by Dr. Tiana and Shax, living out a sordid black and white 1920s Bonnie and Clyde fantasy. So sordid feels like a bit of an understatement, but however, just as Diane is about to reveal how she loses her tail, the Lower Decks team leave the holodeck. So, you know, you always go into these episodes and you think, okay, I'm going to always be surprised by something. This was one of the big surprise moments for me, was this sort of, that we've seen hints of this relationship between Tiana and Shax before, but you know, we learn a lot more about their intimate relations in this episode and how they get their kicks. How did you survive seeing the big Bajoran and the cat doctor essentially gang it on in a Bonnie and Clyde fantasy?
I think I was able to cope with this a bit more than seeing them absolutely stark naked in season two, which someone I saw did a fantastic cosplay of in Las Vegas. But yeah, it's brilliant. I can totally imagine that Shax is up for it, but it's T'Ana that's all about doing the, yeah, let's, you know, computer disengage safety protocols. She wants it as close to the edge as possible. She is all about really, really going hard on this one. And her kinky name is Diane. Brilliant. But just as sorry, the Lower Decks crew are about to find out all the stuff about how Shax came back from the dead, how T'Ana lost her tail, they've got to leave because they start the simulation again, and suddenly the escape route has been peppered by bullet holes.
Is there like a movie, a book, anything like that that you would be like, that would be your go-to holodeck thing where you could embrace a character like Bonnie or Clyde? Or would you be like wanting to be like an Indiana Jones, a Luke Skywalker? You know, what would you want to be sort of role-playing in this?
It'd be cheating to say you'd want to be in Star Trek in a holodeck,
Yeah.
but
Yeah, you can't do that, because I suppose maybe Boimler would be like, I'm gonna, well, I suppose he does. He goes onto the holodeck and pretends to be, you know, a different member of
oh
Starfleet,
God, he
you know,
does.
there.
Yeah, and yeah, take me anywhere in the universe, and he takes him to the warp core.
Yes.
I think with holodeck safeties completely on, I'd want to do motorsports. I'd want to
Nice.
be Formula One driver doing at the championship, knowing that I'd be absolutely safe all the time. But I think that's probably what I would do, is live out motorsport.
You're very much a Tom Paris then.
Oh God, yes, 100%.
So they, as always with these holodecks, there's always a little hatch to somewhere, and our lower decks team end up in a swamp. So a swamp in the Cerritos, how bizarre, but it's one of those unfortunate side effects is that sort of it's turned the hydroponics bay into one. So the swamp is home to the Temerian Defert roots, highly hallucinogenic, and Boimler gains a sea creature head as Mariner finds herself with incredibly long arms and gets trapped in an egg. Naturally, Tendi forces her to hatch and to move her along. So, what did you make of this little side mission into the swamp?
I've got to give a shout out to this one as well, because before coming on, I watched the latest Trek Culture video from my good friend Sean Ferrick. And he raised the fact, and I didn't notice this on both times I've watched the episode so far, there is a dead body in that swamp.
Oh gosh, is there? I haven't had the chance to watch that, see that bit.
Yeah, just as they appear into the swamp, there's a corpse or a skeleton or something in the swamp. It's like, how the hell is that there? But I didn't notice it. It took Sean Ferrick's Trek Culture video for me to spot it and go, oh my God. But yeah, I loved it. I loved the whole hallucinogenic sequence as well. I loved the fact that Boimler's head turned into a sea creature.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Mariner's arms became Mr. Tickles. Are you familiar with The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy at all,
Not
Lee?
too well, to be honest. No, it's always been on my list of things to really get into. Like, I know, like, is it 42 is the answer to the universe?
Oh,
Dressing
yeah.
gowns and towels, you know, that the very basic stuff I know, but no, it's something I've kind of missed out on.
This scene reminded me of a scene in the first Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy book or the TV series, however you want to say it. There's a sequence in there where the infinite improbability drive is activated, and Ford Prefect turns into a penguin, and Arthur Dent's arms become impossibly long. And that's exactly what happens in this, only Boimler becomes some sort of anemone creature. And then, Mariner ends up in covered in these sticks, but she's convinced she's in an egg. She's forced to hatch, and she just admits afterwards, oh, it was so warm in there. She was sad to leave the eggshell.
So we cut back to kind of Freeman, and she sort of finds her crew, our team is sort of relaxing in the sound garden, happy at last, you know, to see her team relaxing. Except they're not relaxing, they're creating a design schematic for improving engine efficiency. Even the ones getting massages are building devices. And, you know, this reminds me, I suppose we speak about jobs. My job is I'm a job coach for a social enterprise, and what we do is we just hire like strictly like autistic individuals to work as like data consultants or cybersecurity experts. And often I'll be speaking with my consultants about like, oh, what are you doing this weekend or any plans this evening? And it's on their work and their personal interest overlaps so often. And it's like, you know, oh, I've been spending my whole day doing coding or working on a design. I'm just gonna go home now and very much carry that on, or further research, or work on a further design, or do that, but it's going to be a personal project and so on. And, you know, when you work with engineers and scientists on one level or another, you know, they're just so passionate about what they do. There's that disconnect between work and play is so thin sometimes.
Yeah, I worked for a telecommunications company for many years. I found myself, when I wasn't working, looking at new mobile phones that were coming out, looking at everything. And I was thinking, why am I doing this? That's my job. Why am I so interested in it? And even now, 7-8 years after I've left, I still find myself looking at mobile phones and wondering what the best ones are out there. And also things like diagnostics. It's like, I don't have to worry about fixing mobile phones anymore. And yet I still look into doing all that. So
It gets into you. That's capitalism, baby. It just it dominates the mind in a disturbing way. So Boimler and co. now end up in the low gravity room, where Boimler proclaims himself anti-grav boy, protector of lower decks. Unfortunately, this is an access room for the deflector dish, a room that fires up while they're in it. So did you enjoy getting to kind of go behind the deflector dish? It's some, I can't recall us, you know, maybe... I don't think that was in Star Trek Into Darkness. I don't think that was the deflector. It was an odd random room, I think, where I'm just thinking of when Kirk was just physically kicking that piece of equipment into line. But I think, is this our first time sort of seeing behind the deflector shield?
I thought the one you're talking about there in Into Darkness was just part of the engine room.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, there's like an anti-gravity bit in Star Trek Beyond, but that's like the center of the Yorktown.
Yeah.
There's the sweet spot in Broken
Hope. That's right, yeah.
Where I've forgotten his name, Mayweather, finds himself upside down in.
Don't worry, the writers of Enterprise always forgot about Mayweather as well.
Very true, which is a crying shame. He was a good character when they let him be. First contact, I think, is about the closest where you see them start to take bits of the deflector shield off. But no, we never went inside it until now.
Yeah, I enjoyed that look behind and so on. And yeah, it was one of those things you thought, oh, it's all going too well here. Like they're not going to be enjoying it. There's always a twist to every room that they go into. So no, it was interesting to see it in action. And, you know, I think one of the things I think we've all probably enjoyed about Lower Decks is that many of these rooms that we might have seen on diagrams or accoutograms, whether it's, you know, Citation Ops or now behind the deflector dish, they're, you know, budget isn't so much an issue. Like if you want to have talking dolphins, there they are. If you want to have an anti-gravity, you know, deflector area, yeah, go ahead, we'll do that. We don't have to worry about hoisting up the actors or spending hours on things like that. I mean, animation is such a good thing for bringing this universe to life in a way that probably couldn't be done in the 90s and maybe even still is a bit of an issue now.
Yeah, I mean, they played up to it with a recent episode of Lower Decks when they said about meat and races with different shaped foreheads. And it's like, you don't have to worry about in Lower Decks or Prodigy for that matter. It's just, you know, get the computer graphics going, get the pencils out. You can have whatever you like. And I'm here for it.
Yeah. So Taws then treats the engineer team to a manicure and pedicure. And it looks like it's doing the trick as all the wristbands are green and as all the eyes are covered in cucumber. But cucumber slices are also under the wristband, causing Captain Freeman's stress levels to rise from green to yellow to red and finally to black. So I think it's been obvious through this episode that Freeman is just absolutely stressed out of her nut and taken out on her team. You know, again, these engineers are crafty, looking for, you know, waste round systems and so on. You know, have you ever found yourself in sort of a Captain Freeman style situation where as you attempt to de-stress yourself that you're actually becoming more stressed?
Oh, we're back in my telecommunications job again. I think I got to that black wristband stage once. It's got to be about 10 years ago. But I don't really like to talk about it. All I know is that at one point I just found myself physically walking out of the office and having no recollection of how I got there. I didn't last long there afterwards, to be honest. It's obviously an indication of how stressful Freeman's life has been over the past few episodes. Because, you know, she's arrested. She's taken over by an alien intelligence. And suddenly her engineering crew are not doing the simplest of things that she's asked them to do. Of course, she's going to blow a gasket. And, yeah, she's... we'll see what they do with her in the shortly. But yeah, I can totally understand that she's lost it at this point.
So we cut back to the Cerritos, and Beta Shift are waiting for their opportunity when the party is crashed by Delta Shift, who also ran into Shax and Tiana going, well, making something in stellar cartography. Oh gosh, that wouldn't have happened on Voyager under Seven of Nine's watch. And they share the stories of Churo Livia, and it looks like they're beginning to get along when Delta Shift managed to get the vent open. So we cut back and Freeman is in the puppy room. Puppies solve everything. And even with a couple of bunnies, but it's not working, unfortunately. Taws is now chain-smoking, and the engineer team rush in with a modified turbolift, apparently re-engineered to de-stress Freeman. Fixing engineers' problems is how they relax, and they've got the green armbands to prove it. And Freeman steps out of this contraption, a new woman, and Taws realizes how effective the machine is and orders it removed immediately, which was brilliant. What did you think of this solution? Sometimes it is just the technical solution that helps everyone out. You know, you can put well-being things into place, you know, meditation, relaxation, bunnies, you know, but sometimes you've just got to just go, right, let's just jerry-rig this and get something fixed. That's the Star Trek engineer way.
Yeah, well, first of all, I've got to say, I think I'm probably the more deviant amongst them, because I think I prefer the room with the kittens. But didn't you just love the puppy as well, who was the back legs were in that little cart as well? So adorable. But anyway.
Puppy that didn't turn into a demonic style creature with big teeth as well. So another plus in that direction.
Yeah, absolutely. They threw a few bunnies in there as well, and it wasn't working. But yeah, I love the fact that the engineering team, they obviously do that job because they love to solve puzzles. They love to solve mysteries. And yeah, you can absolutely imagine. And we know that Rutherford took some tricorder instruction manuals with him to this thing as well. So he loves this sort of thing. He loves mysteries. He loves working on solving problems. So yeah. How would they relax? By solving the problem of getting Freeman down from her incredible stress levels. And I totally buy it.
So we return to the Cerritos as one plot wraps up, another wraps up too. And the bold Boimler jumps into the vent and finds the terminal, but realized the lottery isn't for four rooms on deck one, but for one room on deck four. So they walk away, you know, they want to be all together. So they walk away, leaving it to Delta Shift to win it and take it as their own private quarters. I was, before Rutherford came back, I was hitting myself going, it's going to be a big space, you know, put in four rooms. You can have flat share, you know, in a probably more comfortable way than being in a corridor, you know. So Rutherford really put them into their place there. Were you sitting there screaming at your TV as well, going, there's a simple solution here. You can have it all. You can make this room a bit better.
Yeah, well, that's it. It's a Star Trek starship. You know, we've seen the size of their crew quarters. They've got several rooms. Yeah, absolutely. Put your names down, claim it, and yeah, throw in a couple of bunks. You know, that just replicate some bed sheets or whatever. Just, you know, sleeping bags, whatever you like. And yeah, Delta Shift all over it. Of course, they're going to take it. Private party quarters. And at the very least, they could have rotated it. You know, I say, you get the room on Mondays and Thursdays or something. Yeah. But no, not even Boimler works it out. And yeah, I'm a bit stumped as to how they didn't work that one out myself.
It's sometimes the best and brightest don't take the best advantage of opportunities. I mean, I was hit myself, and I was so glad someone acknowledged it. Like, what were you guys thinking? You know, just like we were all caught up in that all for one thing. And I'm sure we've all been in those situations before. But yeah, I thought it was a nice touch. And as someone that's gone on one of those sorts of sleeper buses from like London to Edinburgh, where you're sort of like, you know, sleeping horizontally, you know, I do not think I want to just spend my whole life with a corridor next to me as I sleep. So gosh, they certainly need to, you know, think about ingenious ways to get out of that corridor. It seems to be a cavalcade of chaos in that place.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever done the sleeper service on the train, but I have done a red eye flight from Florida to Heathrow once, and that was not pretty. You can't sleep
at
all. No. So, yeah, just get out of that corridor. I'm kind of glad that they're still there, because that's a great set for the for them to obviously carry on with scenes. But yeah, for them, get into that bunk room.
Yeah. So the episode finally ends with Commander Ransom ordering 35 hot churros in a plain paper bag. So a nice little gag to end on. What did you make of that little insight into the mysterious Ransom?
Ew. I think was because they said about Ransom, a nice little touch to Genesis, the Next Generation episode,
yeah,
where he devolves into a caveman, and he's got this this woman that he's replicated, is made out of churros, and he has to keep it hydrated as well. And yeah, you see him finally at the end, 35 hot churros, plain paper bag, and you think, oh, and you really hope that there's another damn good reason why he's just ordered it, and there isn't anything that comes to mind.
Are you a churros fan?
I can't say I've ever tried them. I do like tacos, I do like enchiladas, yeah, and that, but I don't think I've tried churros, actually.
There you know, maybe he's just like me. I like a churro, you know, a little bit of hot chocolate, sort of chocolate sauce, you know, or it can be really, really good. So, yeah, I remember sort of having them a few times in, like, places like Madrid and so on. Yeah, I'd recommend it. So I'm going to hope it was just sort of a complete, you know, just an honest thing that he was just going to enjoy some churros. But, yeah, it's Lower Decks. It's never going to be the obvious thing.
He is the ladies' man of the ship, though, so maybe he's invited a few of the crew, or he's got something going on in his quarters, and he's just organizing a churro party. Let's really hope.
So we've dived into this episode. We're four episodes in. What would you kind of give this out of 10? You know, did you sort of enjoy this one? I know you mentioned you're maybe, you know, it's not perhaps finding the season as great as some of the others. What's your feeling having got to the end of it and kind of spoken about it?
I did like it. It was more of one-line gags than an ongoing story. But yeah, I enjoyed it. As I said, it's probably not the strongest episode so far of the season. I really like the season that we've had so far, and I'm going to give this one about a 7.5 out of 10. So, you know, it's still a damn good score.
Yeah, I'm going to give it, I think I would give this one overall in the grand scheme of Lower Decks, I give it like a 6, but I'm going to give it an extra point for all those cute animated puppies. You know, I'm a sucker for that. So I'll give it a 7 out of 10 as well. So thank you so much, Jeff, for joining me today. I mean, you've obviously got a Star Trek podcast yourself. Is there anything that you'd recommend those that are listening and they want to hear more about from you on Star Trek?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I co-host a podcast called Beyond Farpoint with we made this regular host, Baz Greenland. He's busy at the moment doing Lord of the Rings and Babylon 5 and Doctor Who podcasts. So our podcast has taken a 2-month break at the moment. But we will we've just actually released our September episode, but we'll be bringing out the November episode. Well, funnily enough, in November, over on the Holosuite Media network, and that is Beyond Farpoint. I can be got hold of on Twitter or at NCC_17Formula1. And I've also got a retro gaming account on Twitter as well, where we deal with the 80 Sinclair Spectrum, and that account is at Specky World Cup.
Excellent. Well, you can find me. I have a couple of podcasts. You know, we do cover Star Trek randomly on it, but one is Filibuster, which is a sort of a general film and art culture show. Another, the A24 Project, where we go through the filmography of A24 and along the way interview those involved in front of and behind the camera on that. And you can find me on Twitter at @LeeHutchison_ or at @StarTrekVHS. So, you know, it's not just us that you should be following. You know, you can follow the We Made This podcast network online. So thanks so much to for everyone for joining us for sort of another episode. And remember, we are part of the We Made This podcast network. So please subscribe to Rarely Going and give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you want to help out our network, please consider supporting us on Patreon. So if you go to patreon.com/We Made This, find it hard not to do that in the little girl voice from The X-Files. So Star Trek Lower Decks is not all we're discussing. You know, obviously we discussed Formula One, we've discussed Cheerios, but we're also discussing other things here on the podcast network. So here's a taste of what you might have missed on the network in a moment. Until next time, remember, this is the USS Cerritos signing off.
Are you a fan of the Marvel Universe?
Can you tell your Kang from your Doctor Doom?
Well, if so, boy, do we have a podcast for you.
Podcast 616 is the We Made This Network's long-running Marvel podcast, and it's under new management.
We're your hosts, Ashley Thomas
and Hugh McStay,
and together we are going to lead you every step the way through the Marvel Cinematic Universe's upcoming multiverse saga.
Everything from She-Hulk to Avengers Secret Wars will be covered on the podcast in the kind of detail that would make a Wikipedia article blush.
We're going to have some detours into the wider Marvel world, where we'll look at non-MCU projects dating all the way back to Marvel's origins in the groovy, funky 60s, and all the way up to the birth of the greatest franchise in cinema history.
And we'll be joined on our adventure by a roll call of guests so impressively knowledgeable that they'll make the Avengers themselves look clueless by comparison.
So if you like your opinions sharper than Wolverine's claws,
or takes hotter than the Human Torch's underpants,
then get Podcast 616 in your ears as a matter of urgency.
You'll love it 3,000.
Podcast 616. 616. Disassemble.